to order, May 10th meeting for the Fire Protection District. Welcome you all here. And we'll call the call to order. All the board members are present, counted for. Adoption of the consent items, they are items 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. Any issues with them? Dennis? No issues?
No.
Okay.
I move we adopt the consent items, items 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7.
A second?
I'll second.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you.
All those items are approved.
Oral communications next.
Oh yeah, thank you. Oral communications, it's the place on agenda for comments that concern items not on the agenda. And yes? Yes?
Yeah, I have four items, maybe six, all of which will be brief, I think. Item one, the California Special Districts Association has released a new policy and procedure manual template for the special districts in California. And I would suggest, Don, that you appoint a committee to review our policy manual and see whether or not any revisions are desirable.
Okay.
In light of that. It was became available May 1st.
So is this something we have to report on?
No, we don't have to report on it. It's just a matter...
No, I mean the information is online.
Yeah, Brenda can get it for us.
Okay.
From the California Special District. So
okay.
You can't take any action on it tonight because of the Brown Act, so on
right.
Any of these things. Two, I just wanted to announce that May 4th was National Firefighter Appreciation Day, so I got signs. And you'll see in the packet that there are a number of thank you notes that our firefighters received in response to the posting I put on Nextdoor. So I think they were pleased with our second annual celebration of Firefighter Day. I still have additional signs, so if anybody would like one, let me know. Send me an email, and I'm asking $5 to defray the cost of printing, but I still have a few signs left. Item three, there's nothing on our demonstration garden in the packet I saw. And I met with Sylvia Hassai of the part of the Police Protection District to discuss the demonstration garden. And then Sylvia met with Brenda and Joe Gagne, our fire prevention officer. And they have tentatively identified attractive land in the park that they'll devote to our demonstration garden. And we've had our attorney draft a memorandum of understanding between us and the Community Services District. So it looks like that project is well underway. The bad news is the cost has increased dramatically. We budgeted initially $10,000, and our landscape architect now believes it's going to be closer to $30,000.
Well, maybe.
Huh? Well, it's the cost of the delay. So anyway, what we're doing is, instead of having everybody meet with our landscape designer, we're trying to limit comments to writing so that we can reduce the cost, since they charge by the hour. But the likelihood is it's going to be significantly more than we budgeted. So brace yourself for that at our next meeting. Let's see. Item four, I believe we've completed now all of the requirements to renew our District of Distinction and Transparency Certificate with the California Special Districts Association. Am I correct?
I believe we've completed all the training.
Is there anything else?
There may be additional steps.
Okay. Could you check that and then report
yes.
To us at the next meeting so that we can make sure our status is renewed on that?
Yes.
Thank you. And then I have two comments on the proposed public safety building, which I don't see on the agenda. Are you planning on reporting on the public safety building?
I am, yeah. I mean,
okay.
It comes during the...
Okay,
you know,
then I will
session.
Make my comments on that.
Yeah.
I have two comments on that, and
okay.
I will save that until board reports, I guess, is where
okay.
you have it.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Okay.
That's great. Thank you.
Hi.
With the time, I have comments.
Comments?
Yeah, that are not on the agenda.
Okay.
Mr. President,
board members. I'm Michael Bond, retired Battalion Chief Fire Marshal for the El Segundo Fire Department.
Good for you.
I'm here tonight to thank you, your predecessors, Fire Chief Lance Maples, and the late Fire Chief Pete Barraza, the fellow that was smart enough to hire me. But I'd especially like to thank the citizens of Kensington for giving me the opportunity to be part of the Kensington family since the inception of the contract back in 1995. Since that time, I've been honored and proud to say that I'm a Kensington firefighter, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart. But now it's time to pass the torch and let a new generation blaze the trail into the future. With that, I have the excitement and sadness of saying that April 29th was my last day as an official line battalion chief with the El Segundo Kensington Fire Department. As I move into a new phase of life, I will carry with me many great, fond, and not so fond memories of the fire service and the service here in El Segundo and Kensington. Memories of my first day in the firehouse, being taught how to mop the floors. Mind you now, I was in the Navy. A swabby. Clean the toilets, and of course, how to wash the fire engines. The memories of meals, family events, and especially the sounds of the tones going off, alerting us to the emergency calls. Calls like bringing a new baby into the world. Resuscitating a man who was not breathing, no heartbeat, dead on the floor. To talking to him and having him refuse to go to the hospital after he has been resuscitated. Rescuing a woman from a burning building. Falling through the floors of burning buildings. Watching the evening news and hearing tease two firefighters narrowly escape with their lives while watching the news clip, I realized that the two firefighters that narrowly escaped the blaze with their lives was me and my firefighter, scurrying off of a building as the flames were blowing over the top of our heads. Or the time in a large commercial fire, flames in front, hearing the sudden roaring crash of the building collapsing around me into sudden darkness, and asking myself, am I going home tonight? Many times I've gone home and instantly have had my wife ask, are you all right? Being able to read the shadows of the night in my face. Or coming home and hugging my kids, not wanting to let go, until they say, Daddy, you're being weird again. None of this would have been possible without the unyielding support of my wife, Leslie, my daughters, Kendall, Aaron, and Robin. Or without the support, trust, and confidence of my firefighting family. I want to thank you and the citizens of Kensington for allowing me the privilege and the honor of serving the citizens and providing the absolute best service I could provide throughout my years here in the El Segundo Kensington Fire Department. And with that, I would like to encourage you, the Board of Directors, to continue doing the absolute stellar job in guiding and directing the Fire Department, the Kensington Fire Protection District, to provide the absolute best service that can be provided for the citizens of Kensington. Thank you very much.
Thank you a lot.
Thank you, Mike.
It's been an honor and a privilege to work with you. Live well and prosper.
Thank you very much, Mike. It's been a pleasure working with you.
Thank you for the words.
Glad I was here, Michael, because Michael has been such a phenomenal support to the after the work that we have done up on the ridge line, to the fuel reduction projects, to guiding us and really, you know, sort of saying, we know what you're doing on the trail is great, let's look at this. And then we took care of what Mike talked about. He was also, we railroaded him into being on Diablo Fire Safety with a generous support of the chief, and he served as president for 3 years, so we're just going to miss him. But he has agreed to come back in the fall for the end of fire season party up on the hill, and this year he will be able to have a drink.
Or two.
You guys, I have done something truly stupid yet again, having fallen on a garbage can. And I am in deep physical pain. However, so, I wanted to be here tonight. You know, I've talked a number of times to you about my feelings about the hillside and the park. I went through the bound outlooks in the library, and these are from those bound outlooks. What, these are two political ads. One for each of the two advisory votes by which we encouraged the fall board, by which we convinced them that there was, in fact, the community support and will to pay for the park property, which the fall board did not want to support. And the two advisory votes were really a huge watershed in our community politically. The second page, those are all the signatures of people, you know, supporting the first vote, which passed by 77.8%. And you know, the hillside vote passes by 70.3%. So I just wanted to put that out there for your consideration. I look forward to being well enough and not hurting enough to talk to you another time.
Bye, Michael.
So I'm going to scoot off.
You're going to leave?
I am going to cripple walk.
I hope you feel better.
Thank you, Ciara. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ciara.
Other comments? Yes.
I'm Celia Conkus, for those who don't know me. I sent a letter to all of the directors and to Chief Maple and Brenda. And I didn't see it in the packet, so I would like to, if possible, that it just came over the weekend, and so it didn't get in.
Oh, maybe,
yeah. But I want to be sure that you hear me. I've been a long-term resident, a long-time resident of Kensington since 1965. I want to register my strong opposition to a proposed plan to build a new fire station in Kensington Park. It's disconcerting to me that some members of the fire board may be unaware that the residents of Kensington voted decisively in 1995, I think in 1994 and 1995, to buy surplus land from the school district and to preserve it as open space for the benefit of our community. We voted to have a park in Kensington in perpetuity. I urge the fire board to explore ways to restructure and expand the public safety building in its present location on land that is owned by the fire district. The Community Services District is the guardian of our open space and should not consider giving away any part of that land. Any action that reduces the size of our park, our open space, would violate the mandate given to the Community Services District by the residents of Kensington. Respectfully submitted, Celia Conkus.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Celia. Thank you.
You've all received a copy of this, I hope.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm happy to leave this with you. There may be a word or two that I changed at the last minute.
Thanks.
Other comments?
Hi, I'm Gretchen Gilfillan.
I've lived in Kensington since 1958. In 1995, when I retired from teaching, I became a member of the first park committee, and I'm still a member. When I received notice that the fire department wanted to build a building on the park, I was horrified, to put it mildly. I'm here to urge you to add on to our present building, but don't take away any of the park that we so hardly worked for. Got it?
Got it.
Got it.
Thank you, Gretchen.
Any other comments? Okay. Fire chief report.
Good evening, everybody. I will say...
Chief's report.
Chief's report, what did I say?
President's report.
Oh, sorry.
You're later.
Yeah, I'm later. Sorry, Lance.
I will say, as your fire chief, I personally want to thank Chief Bond for his time. You know, it's funny, he started off, said he was retired, and he gave us the date and everything, but if you notice, he's still in a uniform. So
it gives us hope.
I'm not very smart. So I'm guessing I don't have to pay him tonight. So. He's a whole lot cheaper, so let's just keep letting him talk. The item that comes up later on the agenda, the wildfire protection plan, Chief Bond had a very big part. That's why he's here tonight. So we have a couple more things we're going to have him tidy up before he's fully gone. In my fire chief report there, you'll see our 2016 training update. I'm not going to read it to you, it's fairly lengthy, but I'm going to give you a couple highlights that I always like to point out. One of our reasons that our training program stays so robust with the fire department is we have a cooperative training agreement with a lot of agencies in West County. This has been something that we've had in place since the very early 90s, where we have joint training with the Richmond Fire Department, Contra Costa County Fire Protection District, Pinole Fire Department, Chevron Fire Department, the Rodeo Hercules Fire Department, and this is something that really has been key, because all those agencies, when we have a large-scale event in West County, we all work together. So the members of those fire departments and our fire departments are familiar with each other, familiar with equipment that we run, and it's one of the reasons we stay very successful and have a very low injury rate within our organization. Farther down in the report there, you'll see some information about the California Firefighter Joint Apprenticeship Committee. This is, in essence, the program that runs our men and women through journeyman level training. The training is done in-house through our training officer and through our training division, and each member goes through 2,000 to 4,000 hours of journey level training. The key part about this is we turn in reports quarterly to what we refer to as CALJAC, and then they reimburse us for the hours that we train. We're able to use those funds for things like Target Safety, which is our online training software, our ALS Advanced Life Support training, and our Fire Blast Training Simulator. That way, those costs, in essence, we don't have to pay. The state pays them for this. And it's been very effective over the years. On the top of page two, you'll see in 2016, we completed 143 performance evolutions. What that is that's when the engine companies go to the drill grounds and they train exactly how they would perform at the event of a call or an actual structure fire, auto extrication. And so that's 143 times that the engine company with three people are at the drill grounds throughout the year practicing what they practicing their trade. And so it's very time consuming, but that is a very robust number for an agency of our size, and I'm very proud of that. Farther down, you'll see the bulleted section. There's four sections I want to point out there that we continue to really bolster and push on, and that's our wildland annual training that we do. It's the mutual response drill. We do that with Moraga Arinda, Oakland, Berkeley, East Bay Regional Parks, El Cerrito, Richmond, and West County. So that's all of the Canyon Rib agencies. We train together to be prepared for wildland fire in that area. We've also bolstered, you've heard me talk about some of the grants Chief Pagoni has put together for technical rescue. We were able to do confined space rescue last year, rope rescue, and auto extrication. And we're through the grants we've been able to put together, we've been able to do that on a more frequent basis. We have a grant for this upcoming year where we'll be able to do more of that for our new people that we've hired in the last year. Always a high topic is continued training with PG&E for gas and electric emergencies. Ever since the San Bruno incident, we've tried to really hold the PG&E accountable and make sure they provide the training and come out or, and interact with us on an annual basis. And then also this year, we were very busy with our three probationary starts this year that were new firefighters that came through. In the last 18 months, we've had five new hires, and we'll have one more this fiscal year. So that's six new hires in 19 months or 20 months, which is a lot for an agency of our size. So. The one last thing I'd say on the note about training is Chief Gibson has been our training director for the last 12 years. Effective last week, he's taking Chief Bond's spot. He will be our fire marshal like he was 12 years ago. And paramedic Captain James was promoted to battalion chief and will be our training director moving into the future. If you remember, Kevin was one of our first paramedics that we hired when we started the program at Station 65. So it's nice to see something that, you know, how we hired him to be a line level paramedic and now he'll be training our paramedics.
Well, it's kind of scary how long he's been here now. That makes you and me feel pretty old, doesn't it?
When you put it in that perspective, I was sitting in his office today and I'm thinking, why do you even have an office?
I remember when he was a kid.
So. One thing that's not in the chief's report that I did want to report out is we have a fully executed dispatch agreement now with Confire. We will July 1st be transferring over Contra Costa County for dispatch services. And if you remember when I've talked about this in the past, our reason for moving out of Richmond was they decided to restructure their billing procedure. We were in a position where we had cost shares for automatic aid and mutual aid where they hadn't charged us for years. And we were going to go from zero to $448,000 a year. Wow. Which is a giant increase in an environment where we had a great partnership for a lot of years. I was able to negotiate with Confire for $121,000. So we will see some increase in the budget, but it's a quarter of what it would have been otherwise. I do believe our customers that are calling 911 will see an increased service level, and we'll see a greater level of detail in the dispatches.
How do you do the transition on something like that? Are you wired to both of them and then you turn one off and one on, or how?
The PSAP will remain at Richmond. So when you dial 911, the call will still go to Richmond. They'll say police, fire, ambulance. If you say fire, ambulance, they just hit a button and it transfers you directly to Confire.
Oh, okay.
It'll be the same way it is in San Pablo and El Sobrani and those type of areas. It'll continue to be that way.
So there really won't be any transition problems then at all, huh?
No, there should
hopefully
be.
Yeah.
No, we should see nothing but improvement.
Wow.
Yeah.
Lance, did we get some kind of measure of 911 response time or how long it takes from the time they dial 911 to the time that our dispatcher is actually talking to?
What we request every so often is ring times. And so there's a discussion.
What?
It's called ring times. How long when people are dialing 911?
Uh-huh.
How many rings it goes through and how much time passes. We don't track that very often, but I can tell you just being in the service in West County and Contra Costa County, for the time I have in Confires is much, much better. Their call processing time, because we have priority dispatch where when you call in, if anyone's familiar with it, when you call 911 and you have a medical, they go through a priority dispatching list of questions so they make sure the right resources come. Confire is much more proficient at that and their timeliness of that is much better. So it's been something that's been on my to-do list for years. I just had to wait for the right opportunity.
There you guys go.
And there they go.
What's our duration on the new dispatch agreement, or is it indefinite?
It's a three-year contract.
Okay.
Yeah. That's all I have for this evening.
Okay, thank you. Good
report. Thanks,
Lance. President's report. Not much. I'm always impressed with our fire plug and all of the different articles and kind of things that it's always new things in there, and so I think it's a great little letter, and I guess the credit goes to Brenda, right?
Yeah.
Good job, Brenda.
Thank you.
Okay.
Can I add one thing on the fire plug? You know, we got that email, Lance, you'll remember somebody was talking about the Israeli response system and notification system,
mm-hmm.
and you responded and told them about the Contra Costa one. I thought maybe we ought to put that in next time's fire plug, Brenda, just so people know how to sign up so that they can get the...
We did that years ago, but it's probably very timely to do it again.
Yeah, well, I was
just
thinking since we got the email question and comment and everything, maybe we ought to update people on how they can get notified of countywide emergencies.
That sounds good.
Okay. New business, resolution 17-01, authorizing the adoption of the 2017 Community Wildfire Protection Plan, and I'll turn it.
I'm just part of the deal here. Cheryl and I, along with the citizens of Kensington and El Cerrito, have been working for the past year putting together this wildfire protection plan. I think it's something that you will find very beneficial to the citizens, and I will let Cheryl Miller, Guy at Will Fire Save, do a presentation on the exact.
Happy to walk you through. And I have extra ones if any of the community members would like to have a copy. I'm going to walk them through basically the overview of what is it that we've done, and if you'll stop me if you have questions. But what I thought I'd do is literally take you through each of the sections. And explain a little bit about what was the purpose of why we did it, how did we do it, and then what were the recommendations. So hopefully by the time it comes time for you to make the resolution to approve it, you feel comfortable with that. So if you start on the table of contents, that literally will lay out what we are talking about. I'll run first through a high-level executive summary, and then I'll start through the El Cerrito Kensington information is about the planning process and what we're finding, and then we have recommendations in three different areas, four different areas. The first one has to do with information, education, and collaboration. The next one has to do with suppression capability and emergency preparedness priorities. The third one has to do with the hazardous fuel reduction. The fourth one has to do with the treatment of structured ignitability. And then the last piece is, once we get the plan approved, what does it mean? How do we keep it up to date and relevant? So if you want to just jump over to the executive summary, this plan is actually part of a nationwide planning process called Community Wildfire Protection Plan. It came out of the federal government not listening enough to communities. We're in an interesting position that we don't really have any federal lands, but it still makes a lot of sense for us to do this type of planning. Number one, to coordinate with other agencies and with our other stakeholders, but then most importantly, if you want to go after grant funds, which we constantly do for Kensington and other areas in Allegheny and Contra Costa, you have to have one of these CWPPs. So this allows us to take what was a countywide plan and has been approved, and that's how we've been slipping all your projects in, to say in more detail, what do we really want to do here in El Cerrito and Kensington? And we hooked you in with El Cerrito because you're so influenced by what goes on and vice versa, both in here and both covered by the same fire chief, at least, and then your fire departments. When you do this national plan, they want you to look at three things, and we've done that in the plan. They want you to look at prioritizing the fuel reduction, and we looked at it across the county, and now we're coming down to look at it specifically in Kensington. They want us to address structured ignitability. So how fire resistant are your structures, and what are your ideas about making your structures more resistant? And then they most importantly want you to collaborate. So by the time we're done today, tonight rather, you'll see that we've met all three of their main goals to having a plan that is acceptable as a CWPP. Okay, so if we jump on, the introduction says just what I basically said about this coming from a national plan. The scope and purpose give you a little more detail about what is the scope. It's identifying where there are hazards. It's providing some maps of those areas, which of course you have had and should be very familiar in the appendix. It's establishing our priority rationalization. How are we choosing what's higher priority than not? It's describing what measures the community can take, both for fuel and for structured ignitability. It's looking at the best management practices, and then it's also looking at resources. So that's basically what we've done. Again, you should start to understand how the pieces came together. So I'm not going to really go in much detail about the section one, so that starts on page 7 and goes through. You'll notice in the middle there's a whole lot of biological and botanical names because we are very concerned and very aware, so that sort of starts on page 9, and it goes on to page 13, and when my proofreader was reading this, she just looked at me and said, I hope you're right. But they're important. They're all the things that are endangered or are are things that when we do fuel reduction, we need to be aware of to make sure that we're protecting the environment as we do what we need to do. Starting on page 13, we've listed a lot of stakeholders. It was really fun to work with the planning groups and to recognize who's doing what with the lands. And so we've listed them all out on page, all the way up through page 16 to give a little bit of flavor for how do people interact with fuel reduction. Page 17 then takes us to who were the actual stakeholders that participated.
Can I just correct you?
Oh, please do.
The Mira Vista Golf Club is no longer the Mira Vista Golf Club. It's the Berkeley Country Club.
Oh.
They changed their name.
When did they do that?
To Berkeley? A couple weeks ago.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Are they still the same folks, though?
Yeah.
I'm trying to get
well, they were acquired maybe a month or 2 months ago. Okay. So you may be dealing with different people, but they reverted back to the name that they had 100 years ago.
That's easy enough to change, and hopefully still the groundskeeper has been the one to work the projects on.
Yeah.
So we did a series of four meetings. We also did a public survey. Stuff got into the Outlook. You know, the planning process took about a year. And now we're bringing you the final piece for your consideration. So from that, we move on to more detail about what's the potential for wildfires to occur in the area. And what is, if you're not from Kensington, what are you concerned about? So it divided the potential for wildfire into four different ways of looking at the risk versus the risk of actual occurrence, the fact that you've got fire history and you've got fire patterns and you've got fire weather and you've got even a recognition from the feds that you are a community at risk. We know. So the second factor is we looked at, okay, if we know fire can happen here, we also have fuel hazards and we recognize that there is fuel that needs to be dealt with. The third factor we looked at is to flip it and say, well, what are we trying to protect? And of course, there's homes and businesses and critical infrastructure. You have major PG&E, high voltage that comes across. You've got roads, you've got water, you've got a variety of things. And we just wanted to get them down in here. We've got critical wildlife habitat, local watersheds, etc. The fourth factor that we looked at as we were trying to pull together, what are we going to do to deal with this? How are we going to eat this elephant? Was looking at the local preparedness and the firefighter capabilities. So that kind of gave us a nice round way of looking at wildfire. And then the next section in 2.3 starts looking at, well, what are some of the strategies to reduce risk? So this was an attempt. There are 10 different strategies with lots of different bullets. And this was the way to get some ideas on the table. And then from there, we moved into the action plan. So we had lots and lots of ideas that are now in for future consideration as well as for current. And starting on page 29, we start moving now into, well, what are we recommending from this plan to do next? Section, yes, Larry.
Nobody has those page numbers you're talking about.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I'll go back to the other ones then.
Yeah,
thank you, because I have them here and yours got cut off. Okay, so starting in section three, we list a series of how can you prioritize. So the basic things are life, human life. If it protects life, property, and infrastructure, it's going to come up as a priority. If it reduces the spread, that's another one. If whatever you're doing is developing a more detailed plan to allow you to do steps in a more logical way, then that's another piece. Anyway, there's a list of priorities that as we start looking at how do we choose, what do we do next, these were the types of things we considered. So on the next page, 3.2, you'll see the first, hopefully the gray came through the boxes. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. There are four of these. Yeah, there are four of these in the plan. And these are what the group felt were the next steps that we should take. So this is really, if someone says, well, what's the plan saying we're going to do? There are four of these things, and I'll highlight those. So the first one has to do with education. It has to do with fire prevention programs. And you'll notice that we did a recommendation, implementation actions, the lead partners, and then it's a short-term piece. So that's the first one, is that recognition that we need to continue more educational programs. There's a variety of partners from the Protection Board to Diablo Fire Safe to just homeowners. The next one that they felt, the group felt was very important was evacuation planning and preparedness. More coordination and collaboration with partners, and you'll see a series of bullets of what types of things we might take on and do. So that's the second area. The third area now moves us into the hazardous fuel reduction treatment. There's first some background on, you know, what is fuel reduction, what have we been doing, how are we going to do it. And if you jump on through to 4.4, you'll notice there's another gray box. And that has to do with the demonstration garden. I'm glad that Jennifer gave an update on that piece. So the idea of linking education and projects so that people understand why are we doing it and continuing to keep that feedback loop of explaining why it's so important. So that's the education component. On page 4.6 and 4.7 are the actual projects themselves. And you'll notice that they're from a variety of partners. They're not just things that Kensington will need to do, but there are some things. But we know that the Kensington community volunteers are going to continue. Anyway, this is the list of more specific projects. Some are funded, some are volunteer, some need funding. We don't expect the board to fund them, per se, but it's the idea of here's the things the community wants to do. The last section of recommendations has to do with structured nightability. And since we haven't really been able to spend much time on nightability, we've been spending a lot of time on defensible space, this chapter gives us some background. It has a little more educational feel to it when you first read through it. So the sections all the way through page 5.5 are much more just information about what do we mean by making a structure less ignitable. And then that logically led to the gray box on page 5.5, which is, we feel like, education on home ignition and training on that retrofit so that we can make the existing structures more survivable and less ignitable is the fourth and final of the boxes that we recommended in the plan. Then there's also another educational piece of, if I'm choosing to do retrofit, what's the biggest bang for the buck? So we've used information out of the Institute for Building and Home Safety, which is the number one research facility about how do I make considerations. So a piece of this is public education as well as an actual plan. The last section of the plan has to do with sustaining. And on page 6.1 at the bottom, you'll see a piece on the Kensington Fire Protection District. And what we're asking as one of the partners is that as you guys, as the chief does his annual report, and you come up with new ideas or issues, that you just forward them to us. We hope to update this every 2 years. We certainly would appreciate you to continue to match the fundraising. These are not obligations, but just the recognition that you have done it and that we certainly would like to do it in the past. And then the last section talks about how do we continue to evaluate. So hopefully you have gotten some of the signature pages. We've gotten a few more groups maybe since you had the signature pages. Of course, the chief has approved or has recommended support for the document. El Cerrito City Council has approved it. We took it to council. I don't know whether you have the East Bay Regional Park District letter in your packets. That has come in. A couple have come in maybe since you first sent that. One of our stakeholder groups, the Friends of Five Creeks, has sent a letter of support, and likewise, one of the HOAs in El Cerrito in the golf course. So that's the group that so far has been saying we'd like to support it, and tonight we're here to ask for your support.
I'm going to make two comments.
Sure.
One, I think it would be helpful if maybe at the beginning or the end you group together your four little gray sections or highlighted where we can find them, because those are really the meat of the proposal.
I
like them where they are, but if we could put them all together, that would be great, I think, just to highlight those.
Lift them up and stick them under the executive
summary. Yeah, I think that's great. And then good for you. What a wonderful job you've done with this. Thank you so much.
A great group. Thank you. Yeah. Both Larry and Nina participated. Thank you for helping with it. We had a lot of fun pulling stuff together.
And also several representatives of the Kensington El Cerrito Fire Department. Mike Bond was
Michael, of course.
At most of the meetings.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good. Any comments from the audience? Yes?
Along with the demonstration garden and what you have, you might have what you should avoid.
Yes.
Because I hadn't appreciated the Bacchus pleurilaris was so hazardous, and that had been highly recommended for a drought-resistant plant.
Yes, yes.
It may be really good. With Sierra, there's a lot of awareness about juniper.
Yes.
But that would be really good to have that along with what you should have, what you shouldn't have.
And the other piece we've been talking about is some ideas about don't plant this, plant this. So if people have in their head something they think they'd like to have and it's a little more hazardous, how do we tell them, if these are the reasons you like this plant, then here's some others that you might like.
Any more questions?
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Carol.
Having sat in the room, good leadership. That was helped to corral all of us.
So one thing, if I may, on just like I always, I feel the need. So Cheryl's been instrumental in the CWP piece back to 2006 or 7.
No, I wasn't with the Diablo until 10.
Yeah, but you carried the update and the one that carried. And so she's at some level been involved with the countywide CWPP. And then she took that to Alameda County. They mirrored and did a plan. And then she updated the plans, and now we're the first, you know, more focused group. And it's one of those things that we wouldn't be able to do this without someone like Cheryl. For any of you that attended the stakeholder meetings, you see how she brings the group. And it's Cheryl, I just thank you.
How do we get
thank you for the opportunity, like Mike. Thank you for the opportunity to do it.
How do we get the word out on this so it doesn't, I mean, the report sometimes just gets put away and not looked at again. Keep this going.
It talks about that in the report, I'm sure.
That's the community outreach.
I mean, I think part of it is continuing to work, you know, get stuff in the Outlook when we have posture dollars, when the demonstration comes on, and just keep saying, remember, this came from the planning, and if you have an idea, let's get it back in the planning. So the idea is not to let it just sit as a plan, but
to update every 2 years and reference it.
When we finish projects, celebrate them, and then think of what's next.
Also continue the flow into the fire plug, for example. I think every time the fire plug comes out, there's one article about wildfire somewhere in that report. And you've been doing a pretty good job on that, Brenda, and we need to continue that.
Also, having small segmented things in the Outlook would be good. Like, for instance, your idea about plants. You know, just a 10-paragraph article about plants to avoid and plants to that would be good. Would be very helpful and interesting, and then that could reference the report, and then more people look at the report because they're interested in one aspect.
The same thing with ignition.
Exactly.
You know, that when it gets dry, remind people about how to properly use equipment, or to ask their contractors, do you have fire extinguisher? Do you have a shovel? Yeah. Some basic things. If you happen to spark a fire, what would you do?
Yeah.
Most of the contractors don't think of that until the client says, I don't want you starting a fire on my property.
Well, Dominican University is a prime example of that.
More places in the East Bay than we want to think about.
Okay. This is an action item.
I move the enactment of Resolution 17-01 authorizing the adoption of the 2017 Community Wildfire Protection Plan as presented so ably today.
Okay.
I second that.
Okay, great. All those in favor of the resolution?
Aye.
Opposed? It passes.
Thank you.
Thank
good
you
job.
A lot, Cheryl.
Very good
thank
job.
You.
Yeah.
Thank
you. You should come and see us at least once
Michael's
a year.
Michael's leaving.
Sure,
thank
you, Mike. Happy to and tell you what we've been doing.
Hey, don't be a stranger.
Wait, I want to start down here.
I'm going to see you again, buddy. You shake my hand, and I'll see you again.
Yeah, more certainly will.
Hug you, buddy.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been a great time.
There are no words
for you.
What a wonderful job you've done.
Take care.
Brenda, you'll be seeing me some more.
Thank
you to the citizens of Kensington for allowing me the opportunity.
One hell of a fire chief.
Yeah. You know, you ask and he comes.
That's
doesn't
it.
He? You just say, would you? And he just shows up. It's amazing. Peter, Katie, you can speak to that, right?
Yep.
Any request. They're the Public Safety Council, for those of you that don't know. Yeah.
Amazing.
He's your right arm, I know. Yeah.
Okay. Board reports. First is the Finance Committee. Janice, anything to... We've got a meeting coming up.
Yeah, we have a meeting scheduled for June 6th at 5:30.
Okay. Carl, got that?
Yes. I want to thank you for moving the meeting to late on the day. My question is that going to be a demo meeting?
It's the Carl Kruger happy hour.
Well,
is that going to be what?
A demo meeting. You know,
dinner.
No, it is not. I didn't think of
it. Carl, I'll take you to dinner afterwards if you'd like. Okay.
I thought Carl was volunteering to bring them.
Okay, and that's...
Well, thank you for doing that.
Yeah, and it's at the Public Safety Building Conference Room.
Yes.
See you then. Public Safety Building update.
Conference room, what is that? It's on there twice.
Well, that's where we're meeting. That's where the finance meeting is.
Oh, I see. Sorry about that.
At first, I thought it was another item.
There was no bullet in front of it. I should have known, yeah.
So we have been working along, and we're now pulling together a feasibility study in the next 6 weeks. And the schedule, basically, and we can go into detail, the architect's work, kind of final sign-off for us, is 5/31 May. We had a recent look at the plans, and they're just basically filling things out. We are working on an Outlook article that would be kind of summarize what we're doing, the challenges and so forth. The architects are going to add a kind of pros and cons to the article for both the existing building and the park site. And that's out about June
1st.
Okay. I was saying to my wife the 6th, she said, you don't know what you're talking about. So, okay. We are going to deliver the report to the board at our 14th June meeting. And we should have costs. When you're doing a project like this, you have to get all the drawings done before the cost estimate gets done, but I'll work on that with the costs. And then we have a public presentation on June 24th. I think it's 10?
I thought
it was July. 10 to 12.
It was.
It got shifted, yeah.
It shifted again.
It shifted, yeah. And that basically was to get Janice into the meeting, but she's gone for...
For
the times we had available.
June 24th,
it's a Saturday.
Okay, you guys have got to get me something from the calendar, like right away.
We'll do that.
Okay.
Like before we get the article to you.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. And this has been kind of taken a while to resolve. So we're going to deliver the report to the board. It would not be a formal presentation, but basically a review, so that when the public meeting comes up here, you're pretty much appraised of what's in it. And I know you two in particular have felt kind of left out, so hopefully this will help bring you back into the project.
Great.
Okay. It's fair to say that there's two things to say. I mean, we basically have two options. One option is to tear down and rebuild the existing site. And that's not without its problems. It's a small site. The program is larger than what's there now. It's 5,800 square feet. We're trying to get up in the neighborhood of about 11,000. So it's a really push-pull. The kind of approach we're taking is pretty extreme, taking out a lot of soil and rebuilding retaining walls. As you add more program to the site, the harder time we have in storing the cars on the site. So that's our first thing to look at, but it's not without problems. And so with the park site, that basically I think is a fallback. And we know where your feelings are, but at the same time, we have, in this community that's built out, we still have to find a place to put it. So we are looking at both those sites, and I know that's not making some of you happy, but we are. But you understand we have to place the building.
But not in the park.
We have to replace it, and so the question is, can we do an adequate job in the existing? You know. That's the dilemma we have. It's a reality, okay? And if you can find another site, we really would be fine. But we looked and looked and looked, And, you know, we really want the site to be on the Arlington. This is the chief's requirements, and more or less in the middle of the community. So we've looked at sites that are on the peripheral, and they haven't really served the operational part of it. So that's kind of where we are with it. But we are really aware of what you, you know, the feelings about the park, but we do have a responsibility to build a new building. So that's, we're doing the best we can.
Build it on the site now.
I said that we are looking at that. The site is very small. It has issues, and so those issues have to be addressed.
Well, there'll be big issues if you choose the park.
But you realize, I'm sure, that we're in partnership with the Community Services District. So I'm not saying it isn't our decision, but I'm saying there's more information that we need, even in this work group. But I hear you, Gretchen.
Thank you.
I do. Yeah. I promise you, I hear you. Yeah. And all of you that want to preserve the park, I hear you loud and clear. Truly, I do.
I have a comment, Don.
Okay, you have a comment, yes.
Yeah, that I saved from earlier because you said this was an agenda item. I know you attempted to negotiate very early on with the neighbors on the north to see if we could expand the existing site, and their price was unreasonable, I guess is how I'll characterize it. I've talked with one of our local realtors, Josh Dickinson, and he would be willing on our behalf to go meet with the neighbors on the north and talk to them about whether or not we could find a house available in Kensington that we could buy and trade with them for their existing property. Mm-hmm. And find out what their needs are and whether that kind of property exists. So I would hope that you might follow up on that, and that might make the existing site more attractive. If it were a larger site, it might become a more attractive site than it is now. I have no idea, because you know, I haven't seen any
plans or
anything. So I'm speaking in complete ignorance.
It's been in the discussion. And right now it's not in the solution, but obviously we're going to be pushing, you know, if we can't make it one, we might make it another. I think it probably ends up being an expensive parking lot. Hmm. You know, $1.5 million or $2 million, you know, parking lot. Because the shape, the long shape is a little bit difficult to plan with. But we are having a lot of trouble getting cars off the street. You know, we might have squad cars on the street. That's not where they ought to be. So it's not forgotten. There's a cost to it, but we know that if we were to build in the park, they would expect some remuneration for that too. So
the Community Services District?
Yes.
Well, okay, that's my second point. I assume, and again, I've seen none of the plans and none of the cost estimates, but I have heard comments throughout the community that the police quarters are described to me as a Taj Mahal. I have no idea whether that's correct.
What?
A Taj Mahal.
Who?
The existing ones?
No, the proposed on
Is
the plans.
It Taj Mahal?
As a Taj Mahal, yes. And I just wanted to confirm that when you asked the Community Services District what they were interested in for their space, they understood that the only way we can finance this project is with a long-term lease from them at a significant rental, and that the rental depends on what their requirements are and what they ask us to build for them. So they understand that, and that was communicated to them before
Absolutely.
We had our architect draw any plans.
The architect has both experience in fire and law enforcement. They worked with the service district.
Their president and their general manager, presumably.
Right. On the program, it basically was police staff, they did the same for the fireside. When we saw that total and had an early estimate, it was over, and so Lance and I basically sat down and sort of value engineered the program. There are so many deficiencies in both those operations. I think it's even a bigger problem in what they have now. So I think that what is proposed is reasonable and modern and good practice. The police have certain requirements about secure areas.
I understand that, yeah.
Protecting information that they get from the state, crime records and so forth. And they don't have that now. So so I would say it's not a Taj Mahal. And I think they're both, I would say they're both standard kind of modern programs. And I know from my experience on the fire side that that's true, that it's not a Taj Mahal. And I think it's also true for the police side. I think in a way they were modest about what they asked for, so the first time around. I was a little surprised. I thought it would end up to be a little larger than it, to what they thought would satisfy them. So I don't think that's, it's a brand new building, so I guess you could call any brand new building a Taj Mahal, but I think it's practical, functional standpoint, I think it's reasonable.
I have a question, and that has to do with if we were to build the building and the existing site, but we were, would it be a lot easier, would that be more practical to do if it were only a firehouse? In other words, separate building the firehouse and building the police station, and perhaps siting them in two entirely different areas, so that we take the existing firehouse, or the existing public safety building, and replace it with only a firehouse, and then have the, then of course we'd have to worry about how to get the police, where to site the police building. But
yeah.
So does it make sense to separate these two problems, okay. And would it make it more practical for us in terms of putting the new firehouse in where the old firehouse is now?
The first time around, even when we tightened up, well, before we tightened up the program, it did not appear as though we could get CSD on the site. I was surprised when we saw this recent set of drawings just 2 weeks ago, or that they were able to fit both on. We thought that from a community sort of civic standpoint, it was nice to keep the two agencies together. I mean, that's the way it's been. And what I've noticed is that in the almost, well, 17, 18 years on the board, that the staff, the crews on both sides all get along. I mean, it's just been some board stuff, you know. So it seems to me there's an advantage to doing that. So that was built in. And also built in was our idea that we ought to try to find, keep them in the planning process and pass them aside.
Understood.
Yeah. So we've done that. You know, we've mentioned, or we've thought about, could you split them up? So that is, I suppose, something that could happen, but it's not what we're going to show. We're showing them in the same building. But you're right, it would be easier with the existing site if they went away.
Poor choice of words, perhaps, went away.
So they'll have the same problem we have in finding a site, you know, because they're going to need space for their dozen cars or so, and even if it's a smaller building, it's going to, yeah.
I believe the number of cars right now is 7. It probably could be less.
It could be, and it's nice if you get some of the
less than that, because you need one more than you have officers on duty. There can be 3 officers on duty. That's 3 cars. The chief has a car. That's 4. They have a car that is unmarked that they need. So that's already 5. I don't know. I don't know if they could get by with 5 or if they want more than 5 because of one possibly needing servicing.
Sure.
I don't know, but I'd be careful on how many they can really go down without talking. Without talking to them.
Okay. Yes.
Are there any cost advantages of building, of putting both together versus separating them?
Well, I think there is an advantage. I mean, you end up with sharing an exercise room and a conference room and stairways and elevators, public toilets. So that adds up to maybe a couple thousand square feet. So I think it makes sense. And again, I think the sort of interaction between the active crews is a healthy thing. So if we put them separately, then you I guess they'd each want their own conference room and I don't, you know, maybe exercise. I don't know. I think fire side seems to be more into exercise than police. Is that?
Well, I think it's because the firefighters are there 24 hours a day, whereas the police go home.
Yeah, yeah. So there's that advantage. Yeah. Yes.
There was a reference here that the KPCSD, you have had conversations with them and they have discussed this and basically given you the okay to proceed with looking at this.
You know, it is basically, we don't have an informal agreement. And they are, I mean, just as a working body, they're just getting to thinking about this because they've had all these other sorts of things for the last 3 or 4 months. So we basically have kind of a handshake that we can look at it. They have some questions about whether they actually could do a purchase.
Okay.
Did I miss something?
Here's my point. This is a very big issue, a huge issue. As you probably know, I'm opposed to going in the park. But if in fact you've had discussions with the KPPCSD, by the Brown Act, you could only have talked with two of those members and gotten approval.
There is no board approval.
Okay. And we only no board approval.
There's no board approval.
Don't you think it would be appropriate before you make these presentations that you would at least have brought it to the board for approval?
We've asked for a letter and with some sort of board action, but we haven't gotten it.
All right.
Okay.
More questions.
Is that what you meant, or did you mean they have discussed it fully?
Because the implication here was that the KPPCSD has given tacit approval to looking at the park location. And my comment is, I don't think that's the case at all, because to do so by virtue of the Brown Act would require some public discussion in a KPPCSD meeting.
I see what you mean.
Yeah. Yeah. That has certainly not occurred. Yeah. There hasn't even been the remotest of any discussion on this particular issue. Now, my second point. Based on what Ciara provided you, as you know, this park was approved by a 2/3 vote.
Mm-hmm. I voted for it.
I understand, I did too.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming that you, when you make your presentation, you acknowledge that to do this, you're going to have to go back.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've not tried to make present it in any other way than...
Are you also going to be providing for the fact that in order to do this and change the zoning that currently is on this property, you're going to need to get a negative declaration? Mm-hmm. On this project. And I can tell you without any question that negative declaration will be appealed and you will be forced into doing the full environmental impact report. And that environmental impact report will cost you about $300,000 and will take at least 2 years before you get the results.
Yeah. I can't deal with your sort of threat, okay?
No,
I mean, we're trying to get a building built. And we're trying to get it on the existing site.
I'm just trying to tell you the process that I think you need.
You've told me that already, and that's up to you, okay?
So you are just disregarding the fact that this project could be not only delayed, but cost considerable extra money just to get it through the required process that it would take.
I think without... you know, someone, a lawsuit, since we are basically taking one operation and moving it to another, that you could get a mitigated declaration and you wouldn't be the process without someone making you do a full report would not be necessary.
I've done many of these. Appealing a negative declaration doesn't even require an attorney. You just simply have to make a good faith argument that in fact there are other issues there that need further exploration, which are part and parcel of a full environmental impact report. And once you have made that case, then you have to go through and do a full environmental impact report. It's not about a lawsuit at this point. This is simply about setting the, going through the process of requiring you to undertake a full investigation, looking at the soils, looking at the potential for emergency changes in service as a result of relocating, the traffic implications, the fact that there's a school. All these things will have to be investigated, not through a negative declaration, which most of these people don't understand, which is just simply checking a box and saying it is not important, but by actually going through and hiring consultants to study these issues, mm-hmm. which is what an environmental impact report
consists
of. I know you know what it
yeah.
is.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just saying that it will be a requirement. It's not a threat. It's just simply saying that in order to make this project pass muster with the community, you will have to do a full bore environmental impact report. And it will cost a lot of money, and it will take a significant period of time. My last question is this, Don, and we have talked about this in the past, just on a one-to-one basis. I am not convinced that it is essential that you take a building housing both facilities, currently at 5,800 square feet, and take it up to 11,000 square feet. I have gone through these two buildings. I certainly don't consider myself an expert. I know that you are a specialist in this. I know that if you had your druthers, you would make this building larger. We all would, if we had the ability to do so.
I'm happy with the program the way it is. But in the process of programming, I didn't participate. The chief did, the architects, the police staff did. So I didn't make I didn't do any kind of manipulation of the program. So is that right?
That's correct.
I didn't go to the meetings on programming. I thought I would just stay out of it. You don't need a bunch of, well, too many architects in the kitchen. So I didn't see that there was any reason for me to get in the middle of that. And the architects are very competent.
My point is that I would like to see at this meeting that you're going to have with the community some sort of justification for why we need to take an existing building of 5,800 and increase it to 11,000 square feet. As I said, I've gone through these two facilities. I understand they're tight a little bit. I have not seen a brand new, fully modern facility that I imagine is being envisioned here. But I'm sure that if, in fact, it comes down to push and shove, you could possibly reduce the size of that to around 8,000 square feet and provide the needs for these two departments and make it work on that site, because that's where a lot of us in Kensington will be coming from.
Yeah, I know.
We make it work on the existing site.
I know. You want to get rid of some sort of parts of the program that the chief isn't going to tolerate. So, Lance?
Can I say something?
Well, go ahead.
I'm coming at this from 33 years of firefighting experience in New Jersey, and experience with building one firehouse and familiarity with many other companies that built firehouses. And I can tell you that every time you build a firehouse, if you've got any smarts at all, you make it bigger than you need it to be. And you always grow into it and end up needing more space and adding on to the firehouse if you can. I think it's a fool's game to build a firehouse that is not larger than what you need. And if you look at the history of the Kensington Fire Department, which we've got a lot of historians here, you'll see that the engine bays have gotten larger and larger and larger because the engines are getting larger and larger and larger. That's determined not by Kensington, that's determined by federal regulations. The amount of equipment that you have to have in a fire station has increased enormously and is going to continue to increase. And I think it's foolish to talk about squeezing into a firehouse that is already too small. We need a larger firehouse. I can't speak for the police department. I believe that the police department will tell you they have the same issues, that they need their need for space has continued to grow. But I'm not going to talk about them. Just talking about the firehouse, we need more space. And we will need more space in the future. If we build a firehouse that's too small, we're going to have to build another one in 10 years.
The dilemma, Larry, is not what you would do under the ideal situation. The dilemma is that you appear to be bringing it down to two choices, one the existing site and one the park.
Well, you could say the existing one and whatever we could find, but we just, it's not that we have picked on the park, it's just that there's no other land in the city.
I think that one thing, if I may, and Jim, I appreciate your questions, I always do. I would just cautiously say a decision has not been made. The board voted to hire an architecture firm that has expertise in building public safety buildings, both police and fire. They did a needs assessment. When you do a needs assessment, that means you assess the needs of what we do at the current professional standards. So the professional standards have changed since the current building was built. And so there's new rooms and additions and things you have. A decision has not been made even to what exactly that's going to be. We have two finalists. The board on the June 14th meeting, the plan will come out. It won't be the full rollout of the show and tell. And then on June 24th, you'll see the whole rollout of it. That's the point in time when the community who we work for will tell us this will work, that won't work. We think you're building a Taj Mahal, or you're just basically building the needs that we need. And at that point, then it will come back to the board, and I'm sure the community will work to make sure their voices are heard, and the board will make a decision. We may not build a firehouse in either one of the schemes or locations that you see at the next two meetings. I want to assure you that decision has not been made. And as your chief, I hear you loud and clear. The only thing I'll step back on, and I've said this to the subcommittee, is I will be hard-pressed to sit in front of you and say I support building a substandard station with your money. I will be hard-pressed to say, let's build something that's too small again and substandard with your money. I don't think you'd want me to do that. I don't think you'd want me to be a part of that, and I don't think you'd want the board to do that. So I'd use this word. I would plead to you, keep doing what you're doing. The folks that don't want it in the park, they should write letters. They should.
Yeah.
We should stay fluid in our decision process. Janice's idea is a very interesting idea tonight. That's a very interesting idea. And we always talked about purchasing a lot, but we never talked about, well, they love Kensington, let's find them another place to live in Kensington. I don't know if it's even possible. But I would ask you just keep an open mind on the project, and as it moves forward, continue to express your concerns, and let's not get too in the weeds right now.
One last comment. Have you thought about asking El Cerrito to kick some money into this thing, given that we're talking about improving the facility?
Why would they?
It's our facility.
Well, because I'm looking at the last report that came out on service calls, I saw that roughly 60% of the calls occurred from Engine 65 in Kensington and the others in El Cerrito. So given the fact that there is a benefit to the city of El Cerrito to have a great facility here, maybe the city of El Cerrito also should consider putting some money into this.
Give us a cash grant, huh?
Well, I guess what I would say is the reason we're in this relationship is the benefit goes both ways. And not to sound flip, but someday we're going to build a public safety building downtown. We did a needs assessment that said it needed to be 36,000 square feet. if you guys are willing to chip in on that, I mean, you're probably willing to chip in on this. Sorry, Jim.
Jim, it's inconsistent with our contract.
I'm a big supporter of
it. I know.
No, but it's inconsistent with our contract with the city of El Cerrito. Requires us to provide the public safety building and the engines, and we get a break. And that we're only paying 27% of personnel costs rather than 33 1/3 personnel costs, that reflects the number of times our engine responds to El Cerrito. So that's already reflected in the, you know, you can't ask for the same thing twice, Jim, and it's already there.
I think Jim asked me this last time, and so I brought some notes. One thing I did want to bring up when we talk about square footage, I contacted some of my fellow chiefs. San Ramon is pretty soon, very close to having a ribbon cutting of their new station. This is just a station that houses an engine company and three individuals. It doesn't have a police component, it doesn't have an administration component, so it houses three people and an engine company. It's 7,900 square feet. Station 70 in San Pablo is getting ready to get rebuilt here, I believe, in 2018-19 fiscal year. It's scheduled, and drawings are being drawn right now, 12,500. It's a standalone firehouse with no law enforcement component. They run an engine and a squad out of that station, so it sleeps five people.
Okay, well, that's so, part of it.
Yeah,
you know, Lance, I don't have any idea what the proposed breakdown is of the 11,008 square feet and the proposed building now in terms of what percentage is going to fire and what percentage is going to police. Your numbers are in context for me.
I think for discussion, the program is 12,000. It really is about 4 and 8.
Yeah.
About 8,000 square feet.
Yeah. So the fireside's about, I mean, probably, you know, not exact. So it's 8. So that's a pretty tight single engine company. So we have to get Brenda. And there is a certain amount of, there's some shared stuff, which is a benefit that we talked about earlier.
I'm just wondering, you know, we're talking about in the future engines getting larger, more space required. I'm just wondering, given our streets, how much larger can the engines get? I mean, at some point, that just doesn't work anymore.
That's correct. We hope we're at the largest.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Yeah, we're at the largest.
It's the emission standards.
Yeah. As technology has improved, although the engines get larger, their ability to articulate the streets, turning radius, cramping angle, things like that, angle of approach, angle of departure has improved with technology.
I see.
But for communities like us in Piedmont, San Francisco, the Oakland Hills, we're probably at the largest we could go.
Mm-hmm. You know, Chief, the only thing I could ever imagine could change in the future, and not that I see it happening, is to have a crew of 4 rather than 3.
Well, that I mean, that's what every fire chief's dream, but yeah.
We used to.
Well, that would require more square feet because you'd have to have more sleeping area.
Yeah, more sleeping. I mean, that's the big part.
But I think also there's
revenue too, Larry. We can't afford it.
Yeah,
personnel costs are over 90% of our budget. You increase those 33%, and we go broke.
One simple example: San Francisco Fire Department is now putting in washers and dryers for the turnout gear. Mm-hmm. So that they, as a health precaution for the firefighters.
Yeah, they have to run that now every time there's a smoke.
That's being tested in San Francisco, but it is not at all out of the sight, imagination that could become a federal standard in 5 or 10 years. Those are big washing machines.
You're right.
Believe me, they would fill the one bay we have empty right now in our present firehouse.
What?
They're huge.
No. They're about
industrial size. But
yeah, that's what they are. So it's not too uncommon if you have small, maybe smaller or large, that you would share that extractor between several stations. So not every station has a filling, compressor to fill tanks or
and they have breathing support trucks as well.
So anyway, anything else? Let's see. Oh, we're not done.
On this.
Yeah, I think we're done on this. And thank you. I'm glad you stayed, too, so we could talk, you could hear this discussion we've had.
I guess the one last question that I have is, when are we going to get something from the KPPCSD as to whether or not we really, it's even within the realm of possibility to build something in the park? I always thought that was that they understood all of this stuff and that they knew that we could build something there. It sounds to me now like...
It's not guaranteed.
But there must be a time when we'll know that. Whether, are they going to decide on that tomorrow night?
Well, I think timetable's up to them. I don't. Yeah.
I know it's up to them. Yeah, I mean, it's not our problem, but it's impacting building our firehouse.
Yeah. Right? Also, they have to decide whether they outsource or not, and if they outsource, then do they have a smaller area? So we're going to sit here and wait a little while when we get them.
I think we should. Okay. Yeah. I think we should wait to.
Yeah, I mean, we can't make them go faster than they're going to go. Yeah.
Okay. Well, there is some push, Larry. I mean, you're right, construction costs go up, and so after a while you start to say, how long is how long? But I do think that our partners should have a chance to really thoroughly, looking at one of them there, chance to really take a look at this and then make some decisions, and they have their own timetable, and as Don said, you have a lot on your plate right now. And I know this is equally important, and you'll try to work it in. I believe you will. But if I asked you right now when you'd get it to us, that'd be impossible to say.
Well, so. I think Jim's got a very good point, though. I don't see why on June 24th we would go up and present an option when we don't know that it's a viable option. And if we're going to talk about building a firehouse in the park and we don't know whether or not we can do that, mm-hmm. And it's not our decision whether we can do that or not. So either we need to postpone the June 24th or we need to get something that says, yes, it is indeed possible to build a firehouse in the park.
My thinking is if the community is dead set against it, the decision's made. If the community generally supports something, we have a chance. And that's about as close as we're going to get.
Well, no, I don't have no idea what the legal, there was a bond measure passed. I have no idea what the conditions.
We're trying to get a hold of the language, and we don't know.
Yeah, what is the board allowing? Right? That could be.
It's not up to us.
We'd like to read it.
Well, they can read it, and they can tell us what's in it.
Well, they haven't done that yet, have you?
They're just starting on us. Yeah. Be generous here with everybody. But we had, you know, maybe some of you heard, we had talked about a July hearing. It's hard to, we're all cats. It's really hard to get us all in the same room. And so we picked a date, and even that's not going to work. We could push it out again, but, you know.
This building gets used because I tried to have a solid waste meeting on a Saturday, and I had very, very limited options, it gets used. There's
well, we could meet in the bay, you know, if it's well, in the garage of the fire station.
We have it reserved, Brenda, right?
We do, yeah. I'm just saying
And I also think it's important just to bring this phase to completion, get cost estimates, see where we are, costs are going up, you know, construction costs, overhaul go 5%, we're into 8% a year increase right now because there's so much building going on. So I'd like to pull it together, see where we are, and if we can do it on the existing thing, then we're all done. If that's a problem, then we'll have to handle that.
You'll hear what all the problems are when little bit when we talk next month, but that's not meant to be a full hearing, as he said. But at the hearing, you're going to see maps and you're going to see what the possibilities are, and that's still not the final plan, even then. Because you may not, Eileen, you may not be ready to weigh in and say what you want.
Right.
So, but at least it's our presentation.
I think enough for tonight.
Okay.
Janice, education.
We've already talked about the fireplug, so I don't think we need to say anything more.
Okay. Janice, please.
A meeting or two ago, you appointed me to negotiate a short-term lease with the Community Services District. As you know, their lease of the public safety building, the existing public safety building, expires June 30th of this year. And so we need to enter a lease agreement with them for the time after July 1st that they will continue to occupy the building. Be pending, you know, demolition and construction there, or demolition or construction elsewhere. So I've met once with the president of the Community Services District. We made a lot of progress on that. We will meet again on Friday morning, and then I will present our negotiations to our board at a closed session under the Brown Act. We can do that because they're contract negotiations, and the Community Services District will also be, Rochelle will be presenting her view of our negotiations at the next closed session of the board. And then assuming that we get approval of both boards, we would then publicly announce the terms of the lease.
Thanks for working on it. I know it's lots of fun.
Apparently, the one of the agenda items for tomorrow night at the KPP-CFD board meeting is to appoint somebody to negotiate with you.
Right. Correct. Yeah. That's appointing Rochelle. She and I have already met, but there was not a formal appointment. That's why we're having another meeting on Friday.
I see. Okay.
Okay, I'm going to keep going.
Oversight.
Larry, Contra Costa County.
Yes, I realized that I completely blew off the April meeting. I completely forgot about it. So therefore, I have nothing to report on the April meeting.
Okay.
And I will. I've got it written on three different calendars to make the next one.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
it's in July.
Fire Safe Council. Anything there?
Yes. The existing grants are winding down now, and they're in the process of getting new grants in place. So it's kind of a quiet time for the DFSC. But the awarding of the grants is going to start up again in earnest in probably September.
Okay.
That'll be a very busy time for us.
Okay. Thank you. The last in the back of the pocket, the packet, are some letters and so forth. There's a copy of the fire plug. There are some of the, have some of the letters, I guess.
Excuse me?
Anyway, I think we're done. Any letter in particular here in the back?
No, they're just sweet. They're nice little thank you letters. Yeah.
Thank you. We're adjourned.
And then that we adjourn in honor of Chief Bond.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes, nice.
I second the motion.
Thank you, James.
We have a motion on the floor.
Yeah,
second.
To adjourn.
We don't take a motion.
We don't do that normally.
But it was in honor of Michael Bond.
Okay.
In honor of
Campbell. Second.
Just say
all in favor.
All in favor.
Yes.
Can I?
So is this legal?
This I think is from 1990.
I know, but
this is.